Well, it's great to have all of you with us today. My name is Chris, and we're in this second part of this series titled Unstoppable. And what's so exciting about, well, this weekend is we are restarting our physical campuses. And I tell you, there's just something about, I mean, when we think about almost 3 months ago when we decided to push pause on our physical campuses, who would have thought what we would all just as a country face together. And here's what I know. For some of you, you've been so excited to restart our physical campuses. You could not wait to actually step foot back into one of our physical buildings. For some of you, you're just not ready yet. And for some of you, you're in between. I just want you to know, wherever you find yourself, man, I understand. There's not a right or wrong answer in this season, as all of us are at different places. And even for some of you who are stepping into one of our physical campuses, you know, you don't want to hug yet. You want to air high five or elbow bump or, you know, air hug. Like, you're not even ready for that. And here's what we get. All of us, we're just not sure how to make our way through our new normal right now. I found myself in Pittsburgh picking up my mom from the airport and walking into different businesses, and I just wasn't sure all the rules or what businesses, you know, had their dining room open or was it just to go. And I found myself on my phone, Google Maps app, trying to figure out, well, where could I just go sit and drink some coffee until my mom's flight arrived. Like all of us, even as our country starts to restart, we're all living in an interesting time of our new normal. Well, last week when I kicked off the series, I talked about some of these words that, you know, have been, well, they're old words, but they have surged into our daily vocabulary. I mean, unprecedented quarantine, social isolation, social distancing, and yep, new normal, right? Like, that's one of those phrases, is all of us are living in our new normal. But here's the thing about the new normal. I mean, we're not the only group of people across the span of time that have encountered times of the new normal. I mean, in fact, God has been doing his super normal in people's new normal, I mean, from the beginning of time. And that's what we all have to hold on to. We can't be consumed by our new normal. And our new normal, I mean, it is unprecedented, right? We can't be consumed with it and miss God's super normal. And that's why I'm so excited about, well, this weekend as we restart our physical campuses, because God is doing his super normal in the midst of our new normal. I think about our Ridgeway location, and they're stepping in to their new location at the Gathering Place. I mean, we started with a group of people at a coffee shop, and now we're in a new space. It's a beautiful old church, and I just tell you, it's so exciting what God has been doing within that church. Our Clearfield campus is stepping into their new location, and teams of people have just been pouring so much into that location to get it ready to restart. I think about our Du Bois campus as we unify our strategy to reach all of Du Bois. And oh, by the way, we're starting a Monday night service at the Launch Box right in the heart of downtown Du Bois. I think about our online campus that throughout lockdown, quarantine, right, it has been the beacon of hope for all of us to connect with. And here's what's been happening online. I mean, we, for a period of time, had a Saturday night online service, and we stopped that for quite a length of time. But during quarantine, we actually restarted our Saturday night service, and we're just going to keep Saturday nights going. It's been such a great opportunity for people to connect in the life of the church and invite their friends. But we also, during quarantine, started a Facebook service experience on Sunday nights. And we're just going to keep that going. Besides that, Punxsy, right before quarantine, we had just started to go every week in Punxsutawney. Again, a group of people came together that wanted to start a church in their community. And we just said, every week, and then quarantine happened. So as we restart, Punxsutawney, here we go. Plus, God's doing great things through Grampian and North Central. You see, in the midst of our new normal, we're experiencing God's supernormal movement throughout his churches. And that is, we get to be a part of all of that. Well, another one of those words that, it's not a new word. It's an old word, but it's one of those words that have surged into popularity during our pandemic is the word essential. We think about this word essential. The essential workers. I think about all of the medical staff and people working in hospitals and nursing homes and other medical care facilities. I think about our frontline first responders. Throughout this pandemic, if that's you, thank you. Thank you. Because I've thought about those of you who are putting your life on the front lines to help save lives. Essential workers that were standing in the gap and still standing in the gap to help preserve life. I think about the essential jobs. And where so many of the jobs and the people around this word essential give so much life, there's some tension around this word, isn't there? Especially, what companies, what businesses were deemed essential and which ones weren't. And for some of you, you're a small business owner and you found yourself not being an essential business and just trying to figure out how to survive, but not just how to survive. Being labeled not essential. You've given your life to your business, and your business has purpose and vision that you believe in. And so there's a backside to this whole idea of essential, isn't there? And then for the church, kept on hearing people say, the church is essential, but yet churches can't be open. Churches are essential, but dot, dot, dot. But here's what we know about the church. The church isn't about a building, it's about people. And we saw God supernormal happen throughout all of our churches throughout this pandemic. Why? Because you are the church. You have the message of hope. And for some of you, you took a step back to God during this pandemic. For some of you, you weren't sure about God, but throughout this journey, you've taken steps towards God, and you've watched God do something supernormal within your life. You see, I absolutely love what God has been doing with our online campus and so many other churches' online campus. And so I don't want to minimize that at all, because our online campus is such a vehicle, a strategy to share Jesus with countless people. But there's something I know about the online campus experience. And maybe you've felt this. Maybe you've wondered about this. Where our online campus does connect people together. Our online campus can go to places that we can't go. Our online campus scatters seeds everywhere. Our online campus becomes a great opportunity for people to connect with church. There's something that the online campus really can't. I think about when my wife and I were dating, and we were dating, and we had gotten engaged, and then I'd broken off that engagement, and that's a story for another day. And well, I had moved from Illinois out to Las Vegas, and so we were separated by over 2,000 miles. Now, this is going to date myself a bit, but this was like 1995. In 1995, the internet was like, we kind of had it, and we had AOL dial-up, which was really slow, and this thing called the Google had just started, but why search for anything? It was right at the cusp of this whole internet revolution. And so I was living in Las Vegas. My wife was still in college, and, that adage, distance makes the heart grow fonder, it's not true. If you've ever had a long-distance dating relationship or marriage, you know distance does not make the heart grow fonder. And so I had to purchase, because long distance wasn't free, I had to purchase a AT&T calling card. Some of you, you remember the calling cards. And you would have to sit down, pick up your phone, and you would have to input some, I don't know, 16 digits. I mean, it was long, and so you're looking at this little card and trying to dial in every one of those numbers, and inevitably, you get to the very end, and you would want to hit 4, but your finger hit 5, and you would have to start all over again. And so Kim and I, you know, we were purposeful to stay connected on the phone. But here's the thing. We were still not together. Yeah, we were talking, and we were thankful we could talk, but we weren't together. You see, there's purpose in presence. There's power in presence. There's something about being present together. That's why in our day and age now and over this pandemic, I mean, how much time have you spent on video conferencing or FaceTime, right? We can now see each other. But that still doesn't make up for presence, does it? There's nothing like sitting knee to knee and toe to toe. There's nothing like actually having a meal together. There's nothing like having a conversation where you're with someone. I mean, technology is great. It's great. I mean, to be able to see someone now and talk with them, I mean, that's great. But it still doesn't make up for personal presence. You see, this is something that Paul knew, the Apostle Paul knew. I mean, this is before the internet and before video conferencing and before AT&T calling cards. I mean, way before this, what Paul understood, there was nothing like personal presence. So the church, a gathering of people, was all about people coming together. It's why Jesus gathered people together at the very beginning of his public ministry, because he realized the value is about people doing life together, and that's meaning being present together. And that's why we know the importance of restarting our physical campuses. Yes, we can worship online, and online is such an important tool and an important platform, but it doesn't make up for life on life, knee to knee, toe to toe, looking at each other in the eyes, laughing together, worshiping together, learning together, growing together, talking together. There's purpose in presence. Well, as we started last week, we were looking at, well, these two individuals, Luke and a guy named Theophilus. Theophilus, the best we can tell, was a wealthy businessman that was leaning into Jesus, was wanting to follow Jesus, but there was some uncertainty. And so he hired Luke to investigate everything about the story of Jesus and this launch of the church. There are actually two books in our New Testament Bible. We call them Luke and Acts, but they were actually one book with two volumes that Luke wrote. The Gospel of Luke is all about the story of Jesus, and the Acts, or Acts of the Apostles, was the story about the launch of the church. And so Luke goes in to investigate everything, and you're going to see something amazing happen in his life as he talks to eyewitness after eyewitness about Jesus and the movement of the church. And so Luke, right at the very beginning of the book of Acts, one of the last things Jesus said is that you will be witnesses. Where? Everywhere, in Jerusalem, throughout Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. I mean, this is purpose. He's like, hey, gathering of people, you are going to be witnesses to tell everyone about me, Jesus, everywhere. There's no physical boundary or political boundary or group of people boundary. No, no, no. You will be my witnesses everywhere. To where? Everywhere. Does that include? Yes, everyone, to everyone. And that's how this part of the story, the launch of the church, starts with Jesus giving the mission statement to go be witnesses, to tell everyone about him. And Luke starts to write the story of this launch of the church, the church that should never, never had made his way out of this little Jewish controlled area that found itself at the far end of the Roman Empire. I mean, just look at this for a moment. I mean, way over here. I mean, Rome was in control of the known world. Their political power, their military power, their cultural influence, their religious influence, and Jesus. From Nazareth, changed the world. And the Apostle Paul took the message seriously and took that message everywhere because Paul knew that when Jesus intersected with his life, everything was about to change. And as we look at this part of the story, I want you to focus in on something, because Paul's going to make his way all the way to this one small little area. Maybe you've heard of Naples, Italy, Pompeii, Italy. Well, on the western coast, there's one other town where Paul's ship is going to make land. But we'll get to that in a moment. So at the very end of the book of Acts, the story of the church, this is what Luke records for us. It was 3 months after the shipwreck. I mean, we could talk about that. Paul is now a prisoner of Rome because he wants to meet with Caesar to plead his case. And so he's a prisoner on a ship. They're trying to make their way to Rome. They've been shipwrecked. Paul's been bitten by a snake. They all thought he was going to die. Other people wanted to kill Paul. I mean, just to get to Rome, I mean, Paul has faced life after death scenario over and over and over again. And Luke tells us that we set sail on another ship. Who's we? Well, Luke is part of the we. Luke, who started to investigate everything about Jesus so that Theophilus could be certain that the story of Jesus was true, now Luke's entire life has shifted, and now he's actually part of Paul's missionary journey. Luke is part of Paul's journey to Rome, Paul being a prisoner. Luke is now there. And he goes, we set sail on another ship that had wintered at the island, an Alexandrian ship with a twin gods at its figurehead. And then they stopped at a couple other places. One was Syracuse, Sicily. And from there, they, well, a day later, a south wind began blowing. So the following day, we sailed up the coast to Puteoli. Now, where's that located? I mentioned, you know, think about where Naples, Italy is. It's right to the west of Naples. You have the port of Puteoli, then you have Naples, then you have Mount Vesuvius, and then you have Pompeii. So it was right in that region. Now, the day and time was somewhere around 60 to 61 AD when Paul lands here. And that date's really important because Pompeii erupted in 79 AD. And when they started to unearth Pompeii, they actually found Christian symbols. I mean, the spread of the gospel, I mean, rapidly spread everywhere. In fact, when Paul landed in Puteoli, Luke tells us that there they found some believers, followers of Jesus already there, some around 30 years after Jesus was crucified, buried, and God raised them. Already Christ followers in this part of the world. And there are some believers who invited us to spend a week with them. And then they headed to Rome. And on the way to Rome, Luke tells us that the brothers and sisters in Rome had heard we were coming. So it must have been some Christ followers in Puteoli that rushed to Rome saying, hey, the Apostle Paul is here. I mean, he's actually here and he's headed to Rome. And so they started to make their way and they came to meet us at the Forum on the Appian Way, and the others joined us at the Three Taverns. Now, think about these like as rest stops. If you've ever traveled on toll roads, like on the East Coast or In Chicago area, there's these toll roads with the restaurants above the road that you pull off to and you stop to go to the bathroom, get snacks, get something to eat. Well, Rome had these type of rest areas where along the road, they would have every 10 to 15 miles, different markets, different stops where people could stop and eat and drink and rest as they journeyed along the way. And so two groups of Christ followers from Rome, one made it all the way to the Forum on the Appian Way, which was some 43, 45 miles from Rome. I mean, this is a long distance by foot. The second group made it to the Three Taverns, which was somewhere around 33 miles from Rome. I mean, these people were eager to see Paul. And Luke goes on and says, when Paul saw them, he was encouraged and thanked God. I mean, why? There's purpose in presence. You see, just approximately 3 years before this, Paul wrote a letter to the Christ followers in Rome. We call it the Book of Romans, one of the greatest, greatest books in the entire Bible that talks about the nature of sin in a person's life and God's grace. So Paul had written this letter to the Christ followers in Rome. They had received that letter, and I'm sure they were encouraged and convicted and inspired. But when they heard Paul was coming, right? There's purpose in presence. They wanted to be with him so much so. They traveled 43, 45 miles, you know, probably on foot, just to be with him. You see, that's when the Bible talks about in Acts chapter 2, when this first church was formed, that they met together daily and they shared with each other what they had and they fed each other and they served each other and they worshiped together and they were taught together. And guess what? God added to their number daily those being saved. Why? Because something was happening when they were present together. In Hebrews chapter 10, the author talks about, hey, Don't miss out on meeting together. And then there's this tag on thought, as some are accustomed to doing. Why? Because the author of Hebrews knows that there's something about worshiping together, learning together, being together. There's purpose in presence. And for Paul, I mean, he was so encouraged and he gave God thanks. Why? Because these people that he had heard of came to meet him and they could be together. And so together they traveled to Rome. But remember, Paul was a prisoner of Rome, but Paul was a Roman citizen. And what does that mean? Well, being a Roman citizen was something everyone wanted. And you were either born into being a Roman citizen or you could pay an extraordinary amount of money to buy your way into being a Roman citizen. But once you were, there was a whole bunch of privileges coming with being a Roman citizen. And that's what Paul was. And so he got those privileges. So he makes his way to Rome. It says Paul was permitted to have his own private lodging. Why? Because he was a Roman citizen, though he was guarded by a soldier. It says, I asked you to come here today as we could get acquainted so I could explain to you that I'm bound with this chain because I believe that the hope of Israel, the Messiah, had already come. You see, when he got to Rome, he had invited groups of Jewish religious leaders to gather together. And so a massive group of Jewish people came to his house. And he goes, I just want you to know why I asked you to come. I want to share with you my story, and more importantly, I want to talk about the hope of Israel, the Messiah, who's already come. You see, for Paul, he believed that the message of Jesus should go to everyone, everywhere. But he always wanted to start with the Jewish people first. Why? Because he wanted them to know that the long-awaited Messiah, the one they've been waiting for and their ancestors have been waiting for, that Jesus had come. So he invited them first because he wanted to share with them his personal story. Paul, who was a Pharisee, a Jewish religious leader, and a Roman citizen, who when Jesus intersected with his life, changed everything. And now he wanted to tell everyone everywhere about Jesus. And so these Jewish religious leaders and people were like, hey, we want to hear what you believe. For the only thing we know about this movement, and the word movement is actually better translated as sect, which is where we get our word heresy from. So they're like, hey, we've heard about, I mean, this movement, this sect, this idea filled with heresy that is denounced everywhere. We want to hear about it. And so Paul started to share with them. And some were persuaded by the things he said, but others did not believe. I mean, Paul spent an entire day from morning until night talking about Jesus, but talking about Jesus through the lens of the ancient Jewish scripture, the law, the books of Moses, and the prophets, what we call the Old Testament. All day he shared with them, tying Jesus' story to the Old Testament. And some believed, but some didn't. And so then Paul quotes to them from Isaiah chapter 6. And he said, hey, one of the greatest Old Testament prophets said that you wouldn't hear, and you wouldn't see, and you wouldn't believe. And after he gets done quoting to them from Isaiah, Paul goes, so I want you to know that this salvation from God has also been offered to the Gentiles. I mean, this would have sent shockwaves through these Jewish people because they thought it was all about them. Paul's like, whoa, it came to you first. But I just want you to know that this message about Jesus, Jesus came for all people. Yeah, I'm talking with you, but I want you to know, since you're not going to believe, since you're not going to hear, since you're just shutting down, I just want you to know that this story, this good news is going to the Gentiles, to all the people who aren't Jews, that this message is going to spread everywhere, and they will accept it. In this gathering of Jews, what happened? Well, Luke tells us that when Paul had said these words, the Jews departed, greatly disagreeing with each other, arguing with each other. And I think there was part of Paul that was just sad because they wouldn't allow themselves to hear the good news about Jesus. And then, for the next 2 years, Paul lived in Rome at his own expense. He welcomed all who visited him, boldly proclaiming the kingdom of God, the God's kingdom for all people, everywhere. The God's kingdom that was established through Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. That God is on the move, that he boldly proclaimed. He didn't hold back. He didn't hesitate. He didn't come up with a list of excuses. Teaching about Jesus everywhere. Because the early church had one message. Jesus, the Son of God, came and he died. He took on the sin of the world and he was buried. And God raised him from the dead. All you have to do is believe. And then Luke, as he brings this great story of the church to a close, he said that no one tried to stop him. No one tried to stop him. You see, the church is unstoppable. Nothing. Pandemics can't stop it. Dictators can't stop it. Social unrest can't stop it. Governments can't stop it. County commissioners can't stop it. The movement of God, the church, the vehicle, the strategy to tell all people about Jesus is unstoppable. And Luke just brings the entire story of the church to this point to say, hey, no one stopped Paul. And I think Luke knew that nothing was going to stop the church. So, Let's be a church. Let's be a church that goes everywhere to share with everyone the story of Jesus. Let's be that church. So let's not be consumed by our new normal and miss out on God's super normal, because God is on the move and nothing will stop the movement of the church. The church should never have left Jerusalem. The church should never have made its way out of Israel. The church should never have taken the world over. Why? Because Rome was a superpower. Don't forget, God's kingdom. God's on his throne. God's on the move. And nothing is going to stop his church from telling all people about Jesus. So hey, church, let's continue to be that church. Let's continue to boldly share with everyone, everywhere, the story of Jesus. Because Jesus is a game changer, changes every life. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for being part of a bold church, a courageous church, that even in the midst of our new normal is passionately leading within all of our local communities. Lord, I'm so thankful. The bright lights that are illuminating from all of our churches, people that are loving like Jesus loved, living like Jesus lived, leading like Jesus lived, and leaving behind what Jesus left behind, which is more people. That love, live, and lead like Jesus. Love, live, and lead. Lord, thank you for doing your super normal within our lives. In your name I pray. Amen.